Welcome to episode 183 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Australia's National Basketball League CEO, Jeremy Lerliger.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who spent his teenage years as a basketball referee, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I did spend my teenage years as a basketball referee. Has that given me more appreciation for basketball referees when I play basketball? Probably not. My name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek. You are listening to Sports Geek, the podcast, available at sportsgeekhq.com or on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or my favorite podcast app, Pocket Casts. As always, you can get in touch with me via email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com or at Sean Callanan on most platforms. As always, if you want to chat with me, find out how I could help your sports business, whether you work at a team, at a league, or with a business that interacts with sports and sports fans, more than happy to talk to you. I'm happy to help podcast listeners. You can always book in a time for a chat by going to sportsgeekhq.com/chat with Sean. Looking forward to this episode. It was a really good chat with Jeremy Lerliger from, and again, I hope I've got your name right and the pronunciation right there, Jeremy. He is CEO of the National Basketball League here in Australia. And so this is a continuation of the CEO series where I'm trying to interview more CEOs in the world of sport and get their perspective on where sport is headed, where digital fits, how media rights are changing, and just the general things that CEOs are looking for. If you want a bit more background and if you want a follow-up episode to this, you can listen to my chat with Vince Crivelli from Melbourne United, who in the National Basketball League here in Australia, the 8-team league, talking about their rebrand of their team. And then it sort of is a good, if this it's a good it's a good prequel to actually this episode of Jeremy coming on board to run the NBL. So here is my chat with Jeremy Lerliger from the National Basketball League. Very happy to be here at the offices of the National Basketball League here in Melbourne with the Chief Executive Officer, and I'm going to do my best to make sure I get his name right, Jeremy Lerliger. Did I get your name right?
Pretty close, Sean. That's about as close as anyone gets, so well done.
Good Thank start. You, and welcome to the podcast. So you, I want to get a bit of background, I guess, for the listeners. I've spoken to Vince Crivelli at Melbourne United when they went through the name change, and it was around the same time. And you started at the NBL, came in at 2015 when Larry Kesselman took over the media and marketing rights, and a really big change in the world of basketball here. Do you want to take us through, I guess, those first couple of months of that role and building out the team? And it was really starting out the league from scratch again, almost.
It was. It was almost harder than starting from scratch because we had a legacy problem, and you know, Larry and I both like startup world and we both like fixing things, and this was a little bit of a combination of the two. Probably take a step before the acquisition. So I was a partner of a law firm,
yep.
Primarily involved with M&A and joint venture type arrangements, and quite a bit of foreign investment work as well. And in that line of work, I'd come to cross paths with Larry on a couple of different occasions, and had assisted him in a number of his different businesses. But it came to pass that maybe in May of 2015, Larry and I had a discussion about the opportunity that had befallen him, which was the other owners of the seven clubs other than Melbourne United,
yep.
Had approached him with an offer to acquire their interest or a percentage of their interest in the league, meaning that he would be a majority owner of the league. And he and I discussed it over a couple of meetings and whether or not it seemed like a sensible fit for his group of companies to acquire the league, and whether or not they were more effectively positioned to make a go of it than previous administrations. And we decided that there were a lot of synergies there to be realised, and also there are some opportunities that no one had had perhaps the capital to be able to pursue in the past that we thought his group of companies would be able to do more successfully. And I said I'd be happy to help with the acquisition. And basically Larry said, put your money where your mouth is and you can do the acquisition, but you come and join me on day one.
Yep.
So that's what we did. It was my last job effectively as a lawyer, was to help with the acquisition of the league. And Larry acquired a 51% interest from 1 July 2015, and I joined then in the capacity as general manager, which has now evolved into CEO, but essentially the same role and a change in name. And it's been a real journey of exploration and learning and exponential growth ever since.
And a lot of the times they judge a new president or a new prime minister on the first 100 days.
Mm.
That first 100 days in that role, there was so much change coming in. There was new TV deals, website, apps, whole bunch of things that had to get lined up super quickly. You know, what was it like in those first 100 days?
Yeah, and we set that expectation for ourselves. We put a statement out saying that in the first 100 days we are going to turn this thing around. And I guess some of the major milestones in doing so were, well, if you look at where the league was as at 30 June 2015, not a single sponsor of the league per se other than, say, supplier partners. No TV deal currently in place. No revenue coming into the league other than from the finals ticketing levy. So any grants that were for the benefit of the league out of government had expired as at 30 June, so there was literally not a dollar coming into the competition. Within those first 100 days, we had, I think, 24 national partners of the league. We had a TV deal in place which saw every game broadcast live on Fox Sports and one on, I think it was GEM, it was Channel 9's secondary channel. And we relaunched all of our digital assets. We rebranded the league in an effort to reposition its place in the market, make it relevant, young and vibrant once again, give it a bit of a timeless personality. So harking back to the days of old, what everyone refers to as the golden age of the NBL, but at the same time giving it a bit of a new lease on life by giving it a digital footprint that it had never enjoyed before, and thereby making it more accessible to a new generation of fans. That was quite a bit to achieve in the first 100 days, and a lot of it involved basically Larry and I pounding the pavement, going and seeing sponsors. And at that time, we were making promises about what it is that we would do with a product that didn't yet exist.
Yep.
It was a lot of backing ourselves and trading on our reputations and largely on Larry's reputation that, hey, we've got a lot at stake in this, both financially and reputationally, and we will not let it fail. Get on board early while it's really good value. And let us over-deliver for you in year one. And I think the product that we were able to put on court, I think from memory, game one was on the 4th of October in 2015. I think the product we put on court from day one was noticeably different. We asked all of the clubs to take a similar leap of faith as we were asking of those sponsors, put their hands in their pockets and invest alongside of us. And if ever they were going to grow and to invest in their clubs, now was the time to do it, because we were going to do everything we could to give it oxygen, and they were going to get a level of exposure that they hadn't seen for many, many years. And that's, I guess, set the pattern for our behaviour ever since.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that, you know, that that reset, and you know, from a digital point of view, some of the feedback from the fans were like, "Yeah, who is this NBL? We haven't seen you for a while," and you know, just getting the message out there. And things like, you know, being able to stream the games on your device and being just getting access to it. There was the rusted on fans, the basketball fans, they were ecstatic to be able to see the product, but the bigger picture is getting the product to more people and just making it more accessible.
That's exactly right. We actually went through the consideration of whether or not to change some brands as well. So NBL, There was the opportunity to actually change the name, which we decided not to do because there's a fantastic legacy associated with that brand that had a hiatus, I guess, of yep. maybe 10 or 15 years where the brand became not so well regarded for a while. But prior to that, there was some really strong brand equity. But the second one was a brand like MBL TV, which is the live streaming app that you mentioned. MBL TV, the seasons prior, was an absolute disaster. But we decided to maintain the brand. Whether or not that was a good move, I guess you could fall on either side of the ledger, but it did take a lot of convincing the public that this is not the old MBL TV. And we thought if we could keep the brand and improve its reputation, that would be a big tick in our column, that it would be a clear demonstration that we were heading in the right direction. But there were a lot of naysayers for a long time.
And it's really important, like a lot of leagues have gone through that case where they've relaunched a new digital product, like a streaming product, and it's much improved, but you've also got to outmarket the bad product and the perception in the market that people go, oh, I've used that before and it's terrible, when you've gone, no, it's, you know, it's really good. So it's a matter of getting it in the hands of the right people, letting them verbalize a little bit and share it. But it's you can't just push out a new product and go, oh, cool, we've fixed that, move on to something else, because you've got to make sure that people are using it and understand how good it is.
That's exactly right. The same is true of, say, Fantasy League, which we relaunched this year. Kept the same name as previous years, but we've given it a massive facelift and we've seen fan engagement go up significantly. It is hard work building on, negative brand equity or legacy issues, but we were confident that those legacy issues were going to disappear relatively quickly if people were willing to give it another chance. It was a bit of a gamble as to whether or not people would give those same products, I guess, a second chance, and we're very glad that they did. And we're very glad that they were persistent because, boy, were there some teething problems as well. So that live streaming product, there were some teething issues, but we got over it pretty quickly in the scheme of things, and we're there with what we think is now a world-class digital product.
So, yeah, so taking a sort of fast-forwarding to now, the MBL, and, you know, you mentioned there that you were thinking about renaming, but it's celebrated its 40th year, anniversary this season. And so the league overall has embraced it. You've gone and named, the starting five and some of those absolute legends of the game. You know, the starting five is Andrew Gaze, Ricky Grace, Leroy Loggins, James Crawford and Mark Brakey. It shows that, one, that equity was there, but also those fans are starting to come back because that was all fan voted.
Yeah, those fans are starting to come back, or I think they're well and truly back now, which is fantastic. Interesting, if you look at where those players have come from chronologically,
yep.
they were all from that same generation, that same era, the golden age of the NBL. There have been some pretty good players between then and now as well.
Yep.
But, of course, they didn't have anywhere near the same level of exposure as those five greats. And, in fact, I think the next five as well were pretty much all from that same generation of player. I think that speaks volumes about when the sport was getting its greatest exposure, and it talks to the fact that there was a massive dip in following in the generation after. Same would be true, though, I would imagine, if you voted on the best five players of all time in the NBA.
Yeah.
There is a definite correlation of viewership between NBA and NBL. And all of our research as to why the NBL tailed off when it did suggest a marked correlation with popularity of the NBA and changes in culture of the NBA, changes in technology that had an impact on the level of exposure of Australians to the NBA. So, yeah.
There was definitely, there was a guy called Michael Jordan was playing that did have a big effect, and then he retired and the NBA, felt the same sort of thing. So the challenge is now to get more kids that are following the game and they're attending the game to see the stars of today, the players that are playing today, whether it be Chris Goulding or Randall or all those kind of guys. And are you starting to see more of those, more of those kids in those jerseys, and they're the players they're starting to identify with?
Yeah, absolutely. So the point there, I guess, is that the following of basketball in Australia is now as strong as it has ever been. We still have the issue of comparison with the NBA. Now, in years prior to present, and certainly in the first few years when we took over, we shied away from those comparisons. There was no doubt that we were an inferior product. And that's in terms of both the quality of basketball, the quality of production, the entertainment value. But we feel like we've turned that around considerably now. And we don't shy away from comparisons with the NBA. Quite the opposite. We welcome them and we embrace them. And that's why we were so happy to have teams go over and play in the NBA preseason, because we wanted everyone to see that we could compete. We wanted that on both sides of the globe, I guess, both here in Australia and over in the US. But then also you look at who else has been invited to go and play in the NBA preseason. It's us and it's the EuroLeague. Yep. We're the only two leagues that have really ever been invited to go and participate in the NBA preseason, other than for straight out cash commercial reasons.
Yep.
So now we're welcoming of those comparisons, not just in terms of basketball quality, where I'm not saying we're the equivalent of the NBA, but we're a hell of a lot closer than we were. But from an entertainment point of view, we are getting closer by the day. And I think we're probably the second best league in the world now from that point of view. And in terms of our TV production, I think we're getting really close to, if not already, the second best produced league in the world as well. So rather than shying away from comparisons with the NBA anymore, we want fans to come to games to see just how entertaining it is in the flesh. We want them to tune in and see our TV product and how far it's come in the last 3 years. And having taken on production ourselves now, we have 100% creative control over the look and feel and content of the product. I'm really, really proud of how far it's come in those 3 years.
And the important thing from a basketball hoops fan is, yes, you can be following the NBA, but if you want to go to a game and see a game live, the NBL product is the product in front of you, and aligning, you know, the entertainment, you know, the innovation, the stuff that Melbourne United done with the open air games, which is, you know, a phenomenal experience with the, you know, the roof opens and it's a nice Melbourne night, that kind of thing. It just starts making that connection a little bit stronger.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And what rounds that all out is the flow of players between the two leagues as well. And we're encouraging that. People often say, you know, if you lose a player to the NBA, is that a red mark in your column? No, it's quite the opposite.
That's a success.
That's a huge success for us, because the more players going from the NBL to the NBA, the more attraction the NBL has both to domestic and international viewers, and we will do everything we can in the next 12 months to encourage more players to the NBL to use it as a stepping stone to the NBA. And we have come leaps and bounds in terms of making this league a credible interim step, I guess, between whether it's high school in the NBA, between college and the NBA, if you're not drafted, and Torrey Craig's a really good example there, between college and the NBA, if you are drafted and stashed, and I guess someone like a Jordan McRae is a good example there.
Yep.
We are doing everything we can to emphasise that we are the destination of choice for those kinds of players.
And so that relationship, you know, and you briefly discussed it earlier around the preseason games where NBL teams played NBA teams. What kind of how long has that relationship and taken to develop? What have you and Larry done to strengthen those ties with the NBA to say, this is what we're doing, this is our plan, sort of selling that dream that you did early on, but also selling it to the NBL on both the game development piece, but then all that player piece? How long has that taken to develop?
Look, it's taken a good 2 years from when we took over to re-establish the commercial bona fides of the league. And I think that's where we'd been lacking in the past. There were plenty of people here with basketball smarts, but the league had never been in the hands of people who were prepared to take a risk, operate it as a business, put their money where their mouth is and underwrite the success of the thing. And I think once they saw a willingness to do that, the NBA were willing to talk turkey with us. Now, the first real step that we made in, I guess what you'd say is the right direction, is or was hosting Basketball Without Borders Asia. Yep. It was the first time that Australia had really been considered as a destination city for Basketball Without Borders for all of Asia. It was a huge success. The players and coaches from the NBA loved coming here. All of our guests who were young, basically 17-year-old players from around Asia, loved coming here. And we put on a really professional demonstration of just what the NBL is all about now. And I think that was a really significant turning point in the relationship for the NBA and the NBL. And then I think the next one was it was All-Star Weekend in 2017, which was New Orleans, when we were talking with a number of NBA clubs and the NBA about prospects of NBA teams coming to Australia, which is a long, slow grind.
Yep.
And we were meeting with the general manager of the Utah Jazz at the time. I remember it very, very clearly, actually, because it was Michael Jordan's 50th birthday and he was sitting about two tables down and I was trying very hard to concentrate on the conversation at hand and not be a bit of a fanboy and get distracted.
Yep.
Meeting with the GM of the Utah Jazz about how we can work together in the future. And the NBA has a lot of interesting rules about restrictions on marketing outside of your home territory.
Yeah, definitely.
So an NBA club is not allowed to do anything particularly innovative or proactive outside of a 75-mile radius of their hometown. And so they were saying, well, we need to go and talk to the league, but, you know, we'd like to explore the idea of playing a preseason game against one of your clubs. Do you think it's a club who could come over and play against us? And you know, Larry and I thought this was Christmas and said, whatever we have to do, we will make it work. You tell us a date. And we'll go and talk to the NBA at our point of contact. You go and talk to the NBA at your point of contact and let's hope that they find each other internally.
Yep.
And take it from there. And within literally 48 hours, there were three NBA preseason games being discussed. So it had filtered through the NBA. NBA said, yep, we like the idea. We're aware of a couple of other teams who still have some gaps in their schedule. It doesn't seem worthwhile bringing one of your teams over to play just one game and go home. So yep. We think we've found another couple of games for you. And we said, no, we'd really love to share the love and let's yep. get three clubs over here to play those three games.
And again, from a logistics point of view, the NBL clubs that came over, they were preparing for their season as well. The
Not
season,
only preparing
they
for
were, it. They were in season. And
two
then
clubs
to,
in season. It was a huge effort logistically, but the players in particular were just chomping at the bit to do it.
Mm. And yeah, so because you always hear, you know, oh, the long flights and this is, and the Australian players are like, we'll get on a flight. I want to play against, you know, the best in the world. So, and you know, the buzz that it got back here in Australia and the coverage in the US was, you know, terrific for the NBL. And like you said before, sort of put it, you know, let people understand where the standard NBL is and what NBL players, you know, can do on the world stage.
Absolutely. And that Melbourne United game against Oklahoma City was a real heart stopper in the end. Don't get me wrong. The Sydney Kings and Brisbane Bullets acquitted themselves really well against the Jazz and Phoenix. And I think with the exception of the first quarters in both of those games, that those clubs really stepped up and played well. And without making excuses, I think those first quarters were a reflection of the fact that there is no amount of scouting that you can do on tape that
yep.
makes you realise just how big some of these guys are and how athletic they are
yep.
when they're all there on court together. I think that their respective abilities almost cancel each other out and you don't appreciate just how far they are ahead of the pack still. But once our guys acclimatised and adjusted for those differences, there was a significant change at the beginning of the second quarter. Melbourne United, on the other hand, I think with a few guys who had more recently played in the NBA who were in leadership roles, the likes of Casper Ware and Josh Boone, really stood up and played such a significant role, I think, both in the preparation and the execution on the day, that they weren't taken by surprise and they went with a doggedness and a typical Australian underdog mentality. And it, just every minute of that game was so compelling. And to say that Oklahoma were taking it easy, I think would be complete fallacy. If you look at the minutes that their starting five put in, they're greater than they'd played in any of their other preseason games that preseason. And guys like Paul George and Carmelo Anthony coming out and playing for, I think, only the first or second time in front of their home audience,
yep.
they weren't going to take it lightly and get beaten by the underdogs from Australia.
And they would have, they've also would have faced Australian teams in Olympics and World Championships before when playing for USA. So that they knew the fight that they were going to get when
That's
the
exactly
team
right.
stepped on the floor.
Absolutely. And I think you had someone like Paul George played over 32 minutes. I think Carmelo played over 30. Russ played 28. Our guys didn't take a backward step the whole time and it took an unbelievable defensive effort in the dying seconds to stop Melbourne getting over the line. So it was a fantastic game and we hope many more to come and we're certainly working on those discussions at present to make sure that we get those opportunities again definitely in the future but hopefully on an annual basis.
So you're getting to the pointy end of the NBL season. The finals, NBL final series is is upon us. What do you look for from a league perspective for a final series?
An entertaining, hopefully long drawn out final series. I'd like to see 11 games, so 2 3 game final series, semi-final series, and a 5 game final series. Let's hope it pans out that way. It seldom does. There's usually a couple of people who step up, a couple of teams who step up and perform in finals, and others who choke. Yeah. It would be really interesting to see how that dynamic plays out this year, because Melbourne and Adelaide have underperformed in finals in recent times, and Perth and New Zealand have really come good at the right time of the season. Now, the dynamic is probably a bit different this year, with Melbourne and Adelaide going in, I guess, as the two favourites, and Perth and New Zealand, it seems strange to say it, but going in as the underdogs. But you would never, ever write off.
They've both got pretty good pedigree.
Amazing pedigree, and you never write Perth and New Zealand off in the finals. I'd certainly not be too confident in wagering against either of them.
I was listening to a podcast recently with Bill Simmons talking to Steve Kerr, and he said, you know, with all these metrics, you know, when you get a box score, what are you looking at? You know, and he pretty much said, you know, these three things, that's what success is. As a CEO, what metrics, what are you looking at to say we're doing our job right, we're heading in the right direction, you know, onward and upward in the startup terms, you know, heading into that top right quadrant? What are you looking for?
Well, you've got to assess your KPIs periodically, because your metrics of success change with the life cycle of the business. If I was to tell you now what our metric of success is, it's very much fixed on TV ratings.
Yep.
Because TV ratings are a great demonstrator of other factors of success, like commercial revenues and crowd attendance. If your crowd attendance goes up to capacity, your TV attendances are going to increase. Now, had you asked me 2 years ago, initially it was all about a combination of TV ratings, digital engagement, whether it be across social media or downloads of the app, were really important at the outset, and bums on seats. We did a huge amount of work with the clubs to try and increase attendances over those first couple of seasons. We're now at a space where attendances are pretty good across the board, with one or two exceptions. And the clubs are in a position where I think they're really capable now of driving fantastic audiences to most of their home games. So it helps us focus a little bit more on driving TV ratings, I think, which is going to be ultimately the deciding factor on whether or not this thing really takes off and is the huge success that we're all hoping it will be.
And the other part of, I guess, the greater game of basketball, in that, yes, you're in charge of the league, but you're also looking at how can we make sure that basketball is vibrant in Australia. Recently, you know, we've seen a lot of sports sort of follow the lead of Big Bash and pull out their shortened form of the game. You've recently released 3-on-3 Hustle as a 3-on-3 product, which has been around. Do you want to take us through what the NBL wants to get out of that as a product?
Yeah, well, I'd first sort of frame the context of the conversation as what the NBL and Basketball Australia want and need to get out of this product. Now, the reality is Australia is not particularly well ranked either for men or women from a 3-on-3 perspective. I think we're around 40th for women and around 50th for men. And you need to be in the top 10 in order to qualify for the Olympics. And yep. The Olympics is a fundamental point of what it is that we're all driving towards here. This is a permanent Olympic sport being introduced for the first time in Tokyo 2020. So very first amongst our wish list is that we get enough high-level elite performers to qualify for the 2020 Olympics. I think it's very unlikely that any country will qualify across both men's and women's. So we need to get at least one or other over the line for 2020. Yep. But never before has there really been an opportunity, in Australia at least, to capitalise on a new sport, essentially, yep, from an organised perspective anyway, that has a guaranteed pathway to an Olympic selection. And so what Basketball Australia was looking to do was increase participation on a massive scale in a short amount of time, and a commercial partner basically to be able to help them execute that nationally,
yep,
and immediately. And again, much like when we tossed around the idea of acquiring the NBL, we were fortunate enough to have, I guess, a pool of capital that we can draw on in order to do something immediately and at scale that maybe other organisations couldn't do. We also think it'll draw a huge amount of attention to the traditional form of the game. It's really, really accessible. It can be played anywhere. It can be played inexpensively. You don't need many players. You only need half a court. So we think it'll get more people playing the game all around the country, and that will translate to greater high performance in terms of traditional basketball as well. So it sort of ticks a lot of boxes in terms of participation, commercialization, and making sure that we're really well represented on an international stage.
So, yeah, so it'll be, I mean, it'll be really exciting in the fact that you've got that commercial infrastructure there now that you've built out, and that's what you can lend to that product and see where it develops. And it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be exciting. You're right. Not too many sports can say here's a new sport, and it's going to be the Olympics. It's a pretty big draw.
Yeah, it is. And what I really like about it is the accessibility and the immediate vision that it gives kids in terms of being able to join it at the community hustle level or the street hustle level and work their way up as they get older and as they get better. You can win through to those higher levels of the competition, and ultimately our national teams are going to be selected from the pool of players who are playing in the hustle pathway, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, and it's not to be understated to build out that elite pathway as a, you know, from scratch.
That's right. I mean, there's no existing infrastructure to do it. So it was a fantastic opportunity and one that couldn't be left on the table either from Basketball Australia's perspective or the NBL's, and what better way to do it than together and make sure that our interests are aligned.
The other thing you mentioned earlier with the Basketball with Borders is the Asian region overall. How important is that for the NBL to look a little bit outside its own shores and make some connections in the Asia-Pacific region, which we're a big part of?
Yeah, it's fundamental to the long-term sustainability of the competition and the sport, I think. Look, most of Asia looks first and foremost to the NBA. EuroLeague is still battling to get traction in that part of the world. We want to be there and make sure that we're conscious in the psyche of the basketball community in that part of the world, particularly in, say, countries like China, the Philippines, and an emerging market in India, to make sure that we are very much front of mind. Now, there's a number of ways in which you can capitalize on that, and one is, again, TV viewership and the commercial opportunity that brings. But the reality is, those countries aren't going to be paying much attention to the NBL until such time as we have talent from that part of the world competing here on a regular basis. And we're still finding our feet in terms of how we capitalise on that and how we bring that talent here in a way that is both economically viable and also a good opportunity for the players as well as for the clubs and the league here. I think we've had some really good examples. Having Amritpal Singh at the Sydney Kings this year was fantastic. I think he's come a long way as a player. A lot of people doubted whether or not he would get court time, but he's certainly played an important role for them at a number of times this year when they've been found lacking in that five spot.
Yep.
Due to injuries and other factors. And the development in his attitude to the game and his capacity for the game has been exponential. I'd love to see a few more players of around that calibre, you know, just fighting to make it into a list, but when they arrive and either staying or going home as a better, more well-rounded player, that's going to do incredible things for our reputation in Asia.
Any other key wins or successes from this season that you're looking back on as the finals are about to kick off?
Oh, look, from this season, one of the exciting ones for me was the addition of more games on free-to-air TV. So TV audiences have been up, I think, cumulatively in the 30 to 40% mark, primarily because of the fact that we've had two games on SBS and a replay on ABC. For me, that's really important because it demonstrates that if you give it more exposure, it will grow into that space.
Yep.
The product now is where it needs to be from a TV quality point of view, I guess, and a basketball quality point of view, that if you give it oxygen, it will get life and it will expand and take up the space and the opportunity that it's given.
I think a lot of people, you know, history does repeat. I mean, I remember watching, you know, the NBL on a Sunday afternoon on Channel 7 before that peak. Like, and that's where people were watching it, and that's what you're seeing now with, you know, games and doubleheaders on SBS. It's like, well, it's an afternoon. Oh, I'll turn it on. There's the game. Getting the call, learning the players, that kind of thing. It's just vital.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. So we need to. I think that was one of our first comments when we took over the league. Was the first thing we have to do is give this sport some oxygen again. It's been deprived of that for such a long time. And now I guess it's every bit of additional exposure is just more oxygen that allows it to breathe and expand and grow.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. I do have to finish with the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yeah, it would have been an NBL game. Probably in grade 3 or 4, I used to get along and see the Southeast Melbourne Spectres back in the days. Kent Lockhart was my favourite player at
and
the
Arnie
time.
And Arnie Duncan probably would have been on that
yep,
roster.
Yep, that's right. But Kent Lockhart's hair is the thing that I can remember the most from those days.
He was a good player. He had a great mid-range game, Kent Lockhart, pretty unstoppable. You would have gone to a few sporting events over your journey. Do you have a favourite go-to food when you're at a sports event?
Or go-to, definitely the hot dog.
Hot dog?
Hot dog, in seat, just easy to eat, pretty reliable in terms of quality. Definitely good. It's definitely my go-to.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
Does email count?
Email unfortunately counts, and people most people are ashamed when they say that's the first
one. It's absolutely my email, without question.
Is there someone that that you follow or read or look up to that you think the podcast listeners should follow and look up?
there are a number. Not many of them would be mainstream journalists. Most of them would be. I love following athletes.
Okay.
They give you the most candid insight into what's really happening in the world of professional basketball.
And so is there some that a must tune in for you?
You've got to follow Andrew Bogut, yep. Because you never know what he's going to say next, and it's always the honest truth.
Yep.
But look, there's myriad players, both NBL and NBA, who are just so good at telling it like it is. And that kind of candid insight is usually a really good bellwether into what's actually happening.
It is. If you were to pick in the style of Kevin Durant, you're the real MVP. What social media platform is your MVP? What's your go-to?
Insta. Instagram has taken a clear advantage over the others, I think.
Yep.
I think it also suits the culture of our sport and our league as well. And we've got a fantastic social media manager here now who comes out of the world of music and has really given NBL a personality unto itself.
Yep.
And I think it's probably best demonstrated on Instagram, which is why it suits us.
And I think it does suit the athletes as well. I think it's a platform that they're finding their feet on. There's not as much pressure to, you know, to be witty. Not everyone can be Andrew Bogut on Twitter, but they can all share different parts of their life. So I think it works in that sense as well.
I think the interesting thing is what's going to come next? What is the next interesting social media platform? And there's a few out there, and we'll be looking to partner with one or two of them over the next couple of months, trialing over the off season, maybe through the finals, and then looking forward to bigger and better things.
And it does
season.
Change the media landscape and giving it oxygen, you know, and you got to make sure that you are giving your brand and your league enough oxygen on these platforms where these new fans might be. That might be their primary point of consumption, and you've got to be on those platforms.
Absolutely. Not only the platforms but the tech sitting behind them as well. You know, the algorithm automated approach that we've taken to highlights editing in the last two seasons has completely revolutionized the way we use social media.
Yep.
So it's the platform and then all the third-party tech that integrates with those platforms that are fundamental. You've got to have your finger on the pulse, because if you're not the first mover, you're 12 months behind.
Definitely. How can people follow you or connect with you? What's the best place to find you?
I'm pretty much everywhere, but Insta and Twitter at Jeremy Lerliger is probably the easiest. I'm not as active as I should be, but when I do get some content out there, that's usually where you'll find it. And then I guess LinkedIn as well is where some of the more highbrow stuff I get out on LinkedIn. And that's been a surprisingly useful tool in terms of connecting with international counterparts in the basketball industry. It is a global sport, and there are very few social media platforms that do penetrate all of those different markets.
Yeah, that's where LinkedIn is at its best. Yeah, do you take some social media tips from Adam Silver? He's got a pretty strong Instagram game at the minute, and sharing some of the behind the scenes.
I'd love to know how hands on Adam is. I suspect that's fairly well curated and managed.
From my understanding, most of it is coming from him. Someone else might be taking the photos, but it is him. It's not just someone holding his account and sharing pieces. So it is a terrific insight into, I guess, the NBA commissioner going around and he is in a locker room and he is doing this and that, and it humanises the role, and I think that's important from a CEO point of view.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I can tell you if I had the kind of access that Adam has, I'd be taking some more compelling content as well. But you're right, it's important that anyone in that kind of position is demonstrating to the public that they actually know what they're talking about and that they're in touch with reality and the market. I applaud him, and I must try and follow in his footsteps a little bit more.
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy. Best of luck for the NBL final series, and we'll talk soon.
Good on you, Sean. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Want to start driving more revenue from digital? Go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com.
Thanks again to Jeremy. You can follow him, send him a tweet, get him tweeting a little bit more during the NBL finals. Jeremy La Liga, LOELIGER. So please send him a tweet. Talk to him about what you've seen from the NBL, what you've liked. It was really interesting. I was at a meetup with a former podcast guest, Bowden Westover from Catapult, and he actually was discussing some of the integration they've been doing with the content that the Catapult devices have been collecting, and integrating that with the NBL TV product that Jeremy spoke about. So the deal that they've done, and it's really about integrating it into the broadcast, has been both giving live updates on the TV around heart rate, but then also giving the viewer some idea of things like player load and those kind of things, and starting to bring them into the broadcast. So, some really good innovation there from the NBL and Catapult, and it's really good to see podcast guests, team up and be working together. And for those of you who didn't see, the preseason games that Jeremy was talking about, where a couple of NBL teams went and played NBA teams in the preseason. It's just a small stepping stone on both on the court side to sort of show the talent that's on the floor in the NBL, but then also strengthening that relationship with the NBA. So thanks again, and all the best. Keep an eye out on NBL.com.au for the finals campaign that kicks off this week. Also, if you were listening last week, hopefully you grabbed a copy of the new Sports Geek guide that we've got out, which pretty much takes you through the process that we go through in building out Facebook campaigns, whether you're doing it from a membership point of view and trying to drive more season ticket sales, or whether you're trying to build awareness and build vital audiences for what you're trying to do from a merchandise point of view, or even single game ticket sales. So if you find yourself scratching the surface on how in using Facebook ad campaigns, I'd love your feedback. Please download it. We've had some really good response in the first couple of days of it being downloaded. I'd really like to hear your feedback and sort of understand how we go about doing it, and how we go about either doing it for clients or teaching clients how they can do it themselves. Some of the key things around, naming all your ad sets and that kind of thing, is that then it helps with reporting to, how we go about looking at copy and image and calls to action and those kind of things to make our ads not look like ads to a certain degree, but also drive the outcomes that you're trying to do, which is
sell more tickets, the old cheeks in the seats, as I've spoken about before, but then also, you know, selling merchandise, which you can. So as always, as a listener, please get in touch. And if you do meet me or catch up with me or run into me at a meetup, that kind of thing, please come up and say hello. It was really good to be able to meet that same meetup that I saw Bowden to meet people who listen to the podcast. So thank you very much, Kieran, for coming up, and also Rory for coming up and saying hello, because he's in the he was a lurker in the Sports Biz Slack. So it's always good to meet new people that are consuming the content that myself and the Sports Geek team produce, that are also part of the community. So please reach out. I'll do my best to get back to everyone. As always, you can get me on all of those platforms, whether it be sports in the Sports Biz Slack group, which you can join by going to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. And it's really, for mine, I had a few people say, I don't have time, which I agree. There's not a lot of time left in the day. But I find the Sports Biz Slack is a good 2 or 3 minute check-in. You can do it every day. You can do it every couple of days to sort of see what other people are doing. And please share the stuff that you're doing and get feedback from colleagues from around the world. There's some really good jobs being shared in the jobs channel. But, it is what you make of it. And I've got a lot of feedback from people who are either lurkers and keeping an eye on things, but also connecting with some people around the world. So as always, get in touch, reach out. Tell me what you like, don't like of what we're producing. And, you know, if I can help you in achieving your goals, I'd love to help and love to get in touch. So Sean at sportsgeekhq.com is how you can get in touch with me, the old school way via email, or use any of the different channels that I'm available. Until next time, stay tuned for Sounds of the Game. This week, it's actually a clip from the open air game that we briefly discussed with Jeremy, where Melbourne United won the game on Boxing Day. Thanks to the guys at Ubi Park for Mossy for inviting me along. The game with the roof open at Hisense Arena was terrific. So the Sounds of the Game is that final possession where United sealed the win. So until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join over 1,000 sports business executives in Sports Biz Slack. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. Please share your fave episodes of Sports Geek on LinkedIn. Be sure to tag Sean Callanan.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
Want to chat with Sean? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.